What did he say?
Huh? It's time
he
to
said,
speak,
you're
Frank.
On.
He's on my wrong side.
You're on, Frank.
This is to remind me what to remember. To start with, I went to work for Indian Springs on June 1st, 1952, before school opened in September. At the time, the school maintained an office in the Brown Marks Building in downtown Birmingham. And every day, Dr. Armstrong, and the other staff members who were already on campus would drive in and meet in the offices at Brown Marks Building. Well, that's where I reported for work. And this deal went on for about 1 week. And after 1 week, Doc and the other people who were on campus decided they would start meeting on campus. And I would maintain the Brown Marks office. Well, about 2 days after that started, somebody called and wanted to talk to Dr. Armstrong. He was a board member at the time, and he said it was important that he get in touch with Doc. I explained to him that things had been changed and the Doc and the other teachers were out at school meeting and I was the only one in the office. So I gave him a number to call out here at the school and he called back shortly after I did that and said that no one answered. So he said, you see if you can get in touch with Doc before I leave my office. And if you do, tell him he needs to call me right away. Well, I never could get in touch with Doc either. So when time came to leave the office, I got in the car and drove out here to deliver the message to Doc. Well, they weren't in the library where they were supposed to be meeting. So I started looking for them, and guess where I found them? On the float in the swimming hole. I say about three of them were sitting on the float, and the other several were neck deep, hanging on the thing. And I said, Doc, this is no meeting. He says, yes, it is. Says, we might as well be comfortable. So I delivered the message and went on back home. Well, I had a lot of fun times with Doc. He was good company. He and I were invited to go on a fishing trip together in Florida. And we were made fishing mates, and we're given a boat with a guide. And we'd get out early in the morning and try to catch some bass. This went on for several days. And one day, we had been out at dawn and caught a few bass. But we were not happy with what we had done, so up in the morning, we were poking along back to camp along the shore. And Doc was sitting in the front of the boat, and I was sitting in the center, and the guide, of course, in the back. And Doc was still casting. I had quit because Doc was casting right where I could have cast. So I figured there was nothing doing. So I started cleaning out the boat. It was a mess. All kinds of wrappers and stuff in the bottom, and there was also one of these cylindrical oatmeal boxes, and I picked that up and started putting trash in there. Doc said, what are you doing? I said, I'm cleaning the boat. I'm going to throw all this stuff out. He said, put that oatmeal box down. He says, it's full of valuables. So I looked in there, and sure enough, there was Doc's wallet with about $75 in it. his pipe, his tobacco pouch, handful of silver dollars, his glasses, I don't know what all. And that was what he carried his valuables around him the whole time. Well, when we started home, he was eager to get back. We went in his car. He was eager to leave and get back home. And I said, Doc, I don't have any money. I got to go down here to the office and cash the check. He says, forget it. I got plenty of money. And you can pay me back when we get home. So I got in the car, and we took off up the road. And there was a cigar box on the seat between us. And while we were, he had pulled out a cigar and was smoking it. So I assumed it was full of cigars. And we got on up the road in time for lunch. We got out and went in, sat down. The waitress came, says, separate checks? He says, no, give me the check. He doesn't have any money. So he got the check, and we, by the way, he had brought the cigar box in with him. It was lying on the table. And he got the check, and we got up. He took the cigar box, went up to the cashier. He put the cigar box on the cashier's table and says, take it out, and flipped the tops back. And that cigar box was full of silver dollars. And that cashier took them out one by one until she got the right amount. Well, I learned that he had been on a consultation in Idaho or somewhere out west where silver dollars were commonplace, and he'd gotten paid off in silver dollars. So he was still getting along with using them. Let's see, what else can I tell about Doc? Back in the early years of the school, the World Series was played during the daytime. And he and I were both baseball fans. And when there was an afternoon, weekday afternoon game on, we'd slip out after lunch, go to his common room, and watch the series. And he'd always go to sleep about middle of the second inning. Anyway, on this particular day, there was a town meeting scheduled in the gym at 3 to discuss a problem in the dorm circle. There'd been some stealing in the dorm circle, and we were going to take that issue up in the town meeting. So a little bit before 3, I woke Doc up and I said, Doc, the town meeting, you know. He says, oh, yeah, I know. He says, you know what I left out of the Constitution? And I said, no, what? He said, I should have put in no stealing during the World Series. He was a character. Let me change the subject a little bit. Town meetings. You know, there were a lot of interesting things happening in town meetings. One of the first ones I remember took place because students were getting out in boats on the lake at night. And the faculty felt that was unsafe, so we had back up a little bit. I think the Constitution had promised students that the faculty would not do anything that materially affected them without hearing from them about it. So the purpose of this town meeting was to tell them that we were going to ban boating at night after dark. And we had them there so they could hear about it and complain if they wanted to. Well, we told them what we were planning, and Fred Cameron and I, for several weeks before this happened, had gone out several nights frog gigging. Of course, the students knew that. And they said, well, they thought it was a reasonable rule to pass, but if it passed, it had to apply to Fred Cameron and Frank Kennedy. So that put an end to our frog gigging. which really upset Fred. It didn't bother me too much because Mildred refused to cook frog legs. Another town meeting I remember clearly, clearly as I can remember anything, occurred at the opening of school one year. I mentioned this proposition that the faculty would not make any rules affecting students in a material way without having heard from them. Well, in the summer meeting before this school year began, we had done just that. We had made some rule that was going to change things for the students, and they hadn't been there to discuss it with us. Well, no sooner had Jerry Lanning gotten off the bus that first day of the school that he brought the matter up. And he, of course, had plenty of supporters. So one of the first things that happened that school year was a town meeting in which we rediscussed the issue. I don't even remember now what it was, but I do remember Jerry doing that. I do remember the general situation, and most of you know that, I'm sure that some of you know, Jerry Lanning was a very successful lawyer and has recently retired, I think. Can't even read my own writing. One town meeting I remember especially happened on April the 20th, 1968. That day it was a town meeting scheduled to hear some political celebrity. We were having, at that time we were having programs planned for local people of note to come out and talk to the students. And this particular day, we had the president of the head of the Republican Party in the area out to talk to the students. Both Dr. Armstrong and Dr. Crosby were off campus, so I was designated the host for the guest. And when we went into the town, to the gym, to the meeting, I told him that after he talked, I would meet him at the front door or something like that. But I explained that if I was not there, there would be a good reason. For that day, we were expecting our first grandchild. That's the reason I remember the date. Well, we got through the meeting, and I was still there. But that same day, that grandchild arrived, and she grew up to go to Indian Springs and graduate in 1986. This wasn't exactly a town meeting, but it really was not much different from a town meeting. For many years, we had vespers after supper. We used to have them out there on the bank by the lake. And then after we got the town hall, the old town hall, we would have them in there. And Dick Warren's father was a retired minister, and he used to visit on campus for many weeks at a time. And he was a lot of fun, a good speaker, and a willing and able speaker at Vespers. And I remember one Vespers evening, he made his speech, and then he opened the floor for questions. And always there was some student, you know, who was going to ask him something who they couldn't answer, it was embarrassing to answer. And this guy says, "Mr. Warren, you think dogs go to heaven?" He said, "I certainly do, and I know several around here that ain't going to make it." Anyway, let me mention a few. Faculty meetings. I remember one Monday night when somebody on the faculty thought we ought to start some sex education in the courses. Well, there was a lot of discussion, but no decision. We finally left the matter to get suggestions, and the idea was that we would put suggestion boxes around the campus and allow faculty, students, and anybody else who had any ideas about this issue to put something in the box. And we were going to call those boxes sex pots. We usually had faculty meetings for a couple of weeks before school opened in the fall. And one summer, we took up an issue which had developed the previous spring, shorts on campus. And people were a little bit shocked by some of the shorts that the girls in particular were wearing. So the subject of what to do about it came up. And it turned out to be, for me at least, an inspiration to write poetry. There used to be a lot of things out here to write poetry about. In fact, I wrote a lot of poetry over the byline "Plissa," which meant "Poor Indian Springs, self-appointed." And that particular meeting inspired this: "When a short so short as to be taboo, when you can see four cheeks bared instead of usual two." Thank you. that same not the same meeting, but a meeting in the same summer, also brought up another problem with student behavior. One of the faculty members who inspected rooms had found a boy and girl in bed together the previous spring. So that was brought up for discussion. And I believe at that meeting we had students, the student government. And students didn't think that was too bad. So that inspired another verse. They're in the bed together, but it's not for carnal knowledge. It's just another way we prepare them for college. Don't you think that's enough? Let me say one other thing about Billy Slaughter. I can remember, I think I mentioned earlier, or did I, that the first year and a half I lived in town and commuted to the school. And I rode the first day school bus that came to Indian Springs. And you know that I sat on the seat with Billy Slaughter? Now what about that? Here he is, chairman of the board for many years, isn't he? And think of the things he's done for this school. So that is an honor to which I claim. I saw Enie Kemp at the dining hall back when Enie was in school. I smoked cigarettes and I carried them around in my shirt pocket up here. And I guess Enie had gotten parental permission to smoke in the dorm. There was such a thing back in those days. He'd come up to me, reach in my pocket, say, "Smoke now, pay later." One time, Wilma Porter asked me to come to his dorm room during quiet hour and help him with some math. So I went down there, and his roommate, Jimmy McGuire, was not there, which I thought was normal. They usually split up. One stayed in the room, one went to the library. So Wilma and I were working along there, and all of a sudden, the back window opened, and in climbed Jimmy. Jimmy says, "Hey, Mr. Candy, what are you doing down here this time?" Another time, about 5 a.m. in the morning, Jack Donaldson woke me up. Said he wanted me to help him. And I said, "What's the matter, Jack?" He said, "Well, the seniors are up in the pasture. And I think they're planning to drive the cows down to the dorm circle. And I want you to help me stop them." So I said, "Okay, I'll do what I can." And so we went down there, and Jack stationed me on the bridge over the creek. And he went around up behind the fence, around the fence, up into the upper step parts of the pasture. And sooner or later, after a while, I should say, I heard these footsteps running down the road. Coming round the bend here was Ben Payton. Ben says, "Hey, Mr. Candy, what are you doing out here on the bridge at 5? I could don't understand how I got in the wrong place the wrong time so often. Why don't y'all start telling me? let me mention one other thing. One year, and I know what I want to tell about Billy Slaughter, but I'll skip it. One year in geometry class, I had students making up problems to have others in the class solve. It got around to Paul Lyles. Paul says, "In a triangle, if angle A is equal to angle B, and angle C is twice the measure of angle A, then never mind." Let me tell one other thing, and I promise to quit. There was a time, maybe still the policy, but there was a time when you didn't send a grade home to a parent without first discussing it with a student. Well, Robbie Loeb came in to hear about his grade. I said, "Robbie, it's a C." "Oh, it can't be, Mr. Candy." So we went back over the grade book, and he finally agreed that it was a C. But he says, "It's a C, but you can't send it home." I says, "You want a bet?" He says, "I'll make a deal with you." I said, "Like what?" He said, "Well, if you'll send home a B this time, the next grading period, if I don't make an A, you can send the C home and I won't say a word." I thought that was a pretty good deal. So sure enough, he made an A. So the C never got home. I'm gonna quit, y'all.